One of the things that we try to do is, which we sang about, was try to learn and grow and be like Jesus. When we look at Jesus' life, the way he taught, what he could say, what he knew when to say when, one of the things you realize that he had a way with knowing exactly what was ever appropriate to do whenever and however and whatever. And one of the things that we see here in this passage is a way that they happened to get that way, in a way that in his raising, in a way that in his world at the time, his Jewish world, we get to see how he was, and we see a little bit of taste in here of how he got that way. So one of the things that we need to see as we look at this is the idea of how we learn, how we grow, how we get this edge that Jesus had. We see what it was that he did, what we did, his parents did, and then we can certainly make applications along that line in this passage as to how we can do the same thing and pass this on to others. One of the things that you see here is a taste of his very early life when we talk about what we learned there. And we see one of the things that helped him from very early on was that Jesus' parents exposed him to religious matters, to the idea of the law, to the structure of what they were doing religiously when they were very young. If you look in verses 41 and 42, again we read his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. So this was something that they did. Now, keep in mind that the parents that raised Jesus understood about the law and were careful even in his very infant years. If you go back up to verse 9, this is after they had gone to taken the baby to Jerusalem. It says, so when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own city, Nazareth, and the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was on him. So verse 40 kind of fills you in and picks up with that from the birth of Jesus until the time that he became 12. And then we're going to see between verses 41 and 52 how it worked with Jesus between the ages of about 12 and 30 when he began his ministry according to Luke chapter 3 verse 23. Now Jesus himself began his ministry at about 30 years of age, being as was supposed the son of Joseph, the son of Heli. So this is a snapshot out of his time, and we see that this snapshot began when his parents went up every year. Now that word every year, that phrase every year, is kind of important there because it told us a little bit more about the parents than it just may right off the bat. If you even going back into the Old Testament, and we don't have time to really turn this into a lesson about the Passover, but when you look in Numbers, when you look at Numbers chapter 9 and in Deuteronomy chapter 16, what you'll find is that there were some very specific requirements laid out there. There was you go there at this date, and you do that at this time, and observe this Passover, which was at twilight. It's every year. You do these particular things for this reason, and you go through these particular actions. So it was very explicitly given them what they were supposed to do, and here his parents went up every year at it. So Jesus was raised this way, and fulfilled the idea over in Exodus chapter 13 in verse 10 where it says to keep the ordinances in its season from year to year. That was every year. It wasn't you go there and then don't worry about it anymore for a while, but it was every year on that. And then when you look at that, you go down into, as we work the verses there, it says in verse 44, they sought him after they missed him among their relatives and acquaintances. So there was a group of people also with him when he was doing this. And that helped him get this start on it. Now when you look at that, you realize that a lot of the strength of his youth came from a couple of factors. One of them is he was raised with people who were very regular in their service. They knew what to do. They made a point of following it even from his birth, even as he was growing. And they also worked around him and closed around him with the acquaintances, with the friends as they did this. And they had a time in their life that would work, and then there was later on would be a time that it wouldn't, at least with most people. If you look in verse 51, after this was over, it says that Jesus went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them, but his mother kept all of these things in his heart. But verse 51 makes the point there that, in fact, he was subject to them. So they got him in this time when he was moldable. They got him in this time when they could work with him, in that time when he had to do that. So later on, that he would be on his own and the decisions would just automatically be there. Now when we look at things like this, the idea of 1 Corinthians chapter 15 verses 33 stands out when the companions that we're going to be around will partially determine our morals, whether they're good or whether they're bad. The family heritage around us determines whether it's going to be good or whether it's going to be bad. And these things are a big deal here. When we look at the fact that Jesus did this with a family that went up every single year to follow this very specific Passover that they needed to do, it brings us to the understanding that later on, when our children get older and when they go up and they leave, and they will, that they're going to talk about their youth. And I'm sure that in conversations, even though there's not a lot of that recorded about Jesus, but I'm sure in normal conversations, daily, give and take, like we all do, that he would talk about his youth and his past and what it was like. And today, when we talk about our past and remember things, we need to ask ourselves, how are our children going to use the sentence, or how are they going to complete the sentence? Well, we always went to church when? And the answer to that is going to let us look at this case here, where when Jesus went to the Passover when he was 12 on with his family, it wasn't a question of what years did we do it, because they did it every year according to verse 41. But one of the things that we notice as we look at what he did in verse 45 and 46 was, while he was there, he sought out the opportunities to do what he needed to be doing, and he sought out the opportunities to make the most of it. Notice as we get into verse 45 and 46, that so when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. And so it was that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. He was in the temple. That's where he wanted to go. One of the things that we a lot of times try to kid ourselves about is whether or not we're interested in where we go. The fact is, we go to where what interests us. We do with what interests in life. And in this case here, they found him after 3 days, and he's still there. Now, the picture in my head, and I realize it's a picture in my head of the way we do things nowadays. I see people walking around with their face down, and I see them looking at the tablets and their phones, and I read them, and they're just completely consumed in that looking at them. And when I see Jesus here with the picture of him in the temple, that was his interest level. It says they found him there sitting in the temple, both in the midst of the teachers, right there with him, right there around him where he was close to him. And he said, both listening to them and asking questions. So now that's where he was. And he was using the teachers. And here's a fact. Here's just a fact of life in the church and in society and everything else. We need teachers. We need teachers. When we see them, we need to thank them for teaching our children. We need to support them. We need to encourage them. If they come to us with a request for help on something or another about the class, then that's what we need to do. Because these people here, these Jewish leaders, these priests and these teachers and these scribes and so on, stopped and made a point of working with this 12-year-old man, boy, whatever you want to call him, who sat there in the middle of him and was all that interested in him. They didn't brush him off, but they worked with him. They dealt with him. They helped him there on that. And as we get older, we see that the Lord expects us to fulfill those roles. We're like elders are apt to teach. And 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 24 talks about the servant of the Lord must be able to teach. And one of the roles of the Old Testament priesthood, if you go back to Malachi chapter 2, I thought this was interesting when I was studying Malachi a while back, but normally we have a vision in our head maybe of the priest where we think of them being the fellows there at the offering when it comes in and they're there to receive the offering, and that's kind of what they did. We don't hear a whole lot more or think a whole lot more about the image, but over in Malachi chapter 2, notice beginning in about verse 7 where the Lord's talking to the people from Levi the priest. He says, "Then you shall know that I have sent this commandment to you, that my covenant with Levi may continue, says the Lord of hosts. My covenant was with him, one of life and peace, and I gave them to him that he might fear me. So he feared me and was reverent before my name. The law of the truth was in his mouth, and injustice was not in his lips. He walked with me in peace and iniquity and equity, and turned many away from iniquity." One of the things that we find here is that the priest of the Old Testament also had the role of working with people to instruct them, to make sure that they knew the law, to make sure that they told others the law. And when they didn't do that job teaching right, the people suffered for it. When they did right, that let the Lord work with the people, and that let the Lord give the people the blessings because they understood what they were doing. But what also you see in verse 46, while he was there, though, this is Jesus Christ, the Son of God, but he was there in at this time of his life in a role of subjection. What it says that he was doing there was sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. Now that tells us a little something about the role there, that he understood the idea of listening to him. Bible tells us that's a good thing. Anytime if we want to look wiser than what we are, what we do is listen. Proverbs chapter 7 verse 28 says, "Even a fool when he is counted wise, when he holds his peace." So sometimes the listening part will work very well in what we do, and people will think us that we're wise on that, just the sheer fact of listening. In this case here, also one of the things that Jesus was doing was asking them questions. He was working with them back and forth on that to try to understand as much possible as he could. And at this point here, when you get in verse 47, where that worked is said, all those who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. I realized that Jesus was the Son of God. But I also believe that part of that, just like Paul talks about in the book of Hebrews, where he had to make life just as we do. I don't think that everything that he ever had in the way of wisdom came from just God calling him up and saying, "Say this, say this, say this." Jesus knew what it was like to listen to the law. Jesus knew what it was like to work with the law, to follow the law. He knew what it was like to have to interpret the law and blend it into life and struggle with do this, do that, or whatever. Jesus knew how to work that, partly because he had learned that early in his life. Then one of the things that he did after he learned that, or after he started applying to that, what he says in verse 47, he says to his parents, "And why did you not seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business?" What he did was he made it his business. That's in the New King James. The New American Standard says that he had to be in his Father's house, but there's a footnote that says the affairs in the things of my Father. He had a work to do. He knew where he was going with this. Now, the fact is, our study kind of determines our direction of life. If I'm going to be a doctor, what I need to do is I need to go to medical school. If I'm going to be a lawyer, I need to go to law school. If I'm going to be an engineer, I need to go to engineering school. We kind of work that way here. In this case here, Jesus knew where he was going with the business of his Father. He knew what was intended for his life, and he got all of it he could there. Now, we need to ask ourselves on that same thing there, when, as I learn this, as I sit here, as I use this, what do I do with it in my life? Is that saying that all of us have to become preachers, or is that saying all of us have to become whatever role it is in the church? No, but it says that those things need to be a part of our life, and we need to realize that that instruction, that teaching that we get early in our lives needs to be applied to our life and become a part out of it, just like if we were going to any other school. And that worked, because if you look over in Mark chapter 1, verses 21 and 22, what you'll see is that he was a successful teacher on that. He says in verse 21, "And they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and taught." Well, he knew that was his role. He needed to be able to do that, so he went into the synagogue. He taught them. That's how he would go into places and work with them. And it says in verse 22, "And they were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes." So he took these things, applied them to a life, and made it his Father's business. And the other thing that we notice is, in addition to that part of his life when he went into the synagogues, what we realize from today's passage is that he started this early. And what we end up with is a fellow, when he went into his ministry being about 30 years of age, we have a fellow who had started early, who had years to work on that, and went into his ministry a well-seasoned fella who knew his book, who knew the nuances of the law, knew how to handle it because he had started early in that. Now, what he did as he went there, that tells us that when we do this, that we need to learn, we need to make the opportunity of it. And as we do that, one of the things that we get into is in verse 51 and 52. After he gets into this seasoning, this learning, but what he did was he applied it to his whole life. Now, a teaching has got to be applied on that. Notice in verse 51, he says, "He went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them," referring to his parents, "but his mother kept all these things in her heart." There were things about this that she heard from him and had seen that she didn't totally understand. But what she knew was they were good things. She knew that they had had a child who was into the law, who understood it, who was into the Word of God, who could work with the teachers, who knew how to listen, who knew how to ask questions. And one of the things that said there that he was subject to them. So that says his attitude with his parents was the same. And it tells us that no matter how bright he was, no matter how sharp he was, or how understanding of that, that he realized that being smart doesn't equal the freedom there to be difficult or to be different with them. He was subject to to them. The idea of honoring the parents was one of the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20. Paul picks it up in Ephesians chapter 6 and talks about it there, that that's the role in our families. That's the role with our parents, with our fathers. And this gave him a season in there that wasn't in the law. This gave him working with people who were already there. One of the things that I think is interesting that we need to realize that this is a rich time when our children are at home. This is a rich time that we can work with them in a little bit different way. If you look over in Deuteronomy chapter 6, that's the chapter that has the well-known passage that talks about learning in the home and so on. But I want to go to verse 20 and notice the connection that parents can do on this and can help their children with. In Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 20, when your son asks you in time to come, saying, what is the meaning of the testimony, the statutes, and the judgments which your father, or which the Lord your God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders before our eyes, great and severe against Egypt, Pharaoh and all his household. Then he brought us out from there, that he might bring us to give us the land of which he swore to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is to this day. Then it will be righteous for us if we are careful to observe all these commandments before the Lord our God, as he has commanded us. Now what he's saying there is that the household, the father, the parents, have that ability, that time, that they can complete the loop in the questions that children ask. I'm sure that I ask it. I'm sure that you all ask it. I'm sure that my children ask it. And I'm sure that your children ask it. Why do we do this? Do I have to? Do I need to? What's the problem with this? Why is this? And he's saying that this time of life, when children are with us and start asking us these questions, is the time that parents can connect the dots to the teaching. A child can go to every Bible school there is. You can drag him to every meeting in the county during the summer and the spring and the fall, just like that board out there is just full of gospel meetings and VBSs and chances to learn. But the bottom line is, when the children get home, when the young people get home, they're going to ask you, like, why and do I have to? And verse 20 says this is going to happen when your son asks you in the time to come. And notice the question, what is the meaning of the testimonies, the statutes, and the judgments? It's not exactly what are they, but it's what's the meaning of them. How do I take this, and how do I apply it? Why do I need to? Then verse 21 begins. He says, that's the time that the parents can supply the nuances, and today we would call it, they can connect the dots in it. They can say, you shall say, we were slaves. And that sounds a little bit about, this is how it used to be in the good old days back when. He says, we were slaves. This is how we were in verse 21. And then in verse 22, it's God did this for us because we were in such problems. He brought us out there. And then in verse 23, what you see is that he might bring us in, this talking about the land to which he swore to our fathers. Then that's your chance to let them know that God fulfills promises. God's a faithful God. Then in verse 24 and 25, that lets them tell the children and lets us tell our children, this is the blessings of all of this faithfulness. What you've got there is something a little bit different from just sitting there opening the Bible and saying, this is the facts. This is where the parents can sit there, use their emotional connection, explain it to questions as they are asking all of our homes, and let you close the circle, that lets you complete this loop of the questions where now they understand where they came from and how they got there and what's in it for their parents. And that's a critical role there, because to be honest, that children are going to look back someday and they're going to have a different view of their childhood than they have now, because to be honest, it's not always completely pleasant sometimes when you have to correct children. But notice what he says in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And whether the discipline is sometimes corrective, or whether it's this detailed explanation into the nuances of who we are and why we're there, that gives the children the foundation that they need. And Jesus was able to take these things because become successful with them. And he says in verse 52, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and favor with God and men." One of the things that Jesus did with all of that was he learned how it was, and he learned the ways of people. He learned the ways of God. He also learned the ways of men so that he could work with everyone on that. And the result is that he was able to do everything that he needed to do. Now, when we go through this, we need to make sure that just like we see the example of the parents of Jesus, that needs to be our story, because you've got two different things going on in a family. That you could, when you've got parents who are walking around and they've got their child holding on to their hands and their child singing the B-I-B-L-E, "Oh, that's the book for me." When you've got them saying that to the child, that's kind of new. That song's kind of rhymey, and they like singing the B-I-B-L-E, "Oh, that's the book for me." And the parents are proud of that, and rightfully so, rightfully so. But their thoughts are going a little bit deeper. Their thoughts are going just a little bit deeper than the child's thoughts are, because they're seeing it start to work, that what we're talking about. They're seeing it start to connect in the child. And whereas the child is singing the B-I-B-L-E, "Oh, that's the book for me," the parents are thinking, maybe I've got another Timothy. And in that case there, they think about Lois and Eunice, where Paul talked about him and about the raising that he had. And you see over in Acts chapter 16, where as Timothy was raised and a young man working with Paul, that he had a good reputation among the church. Or maybe instead of Timothy, they're thinking about Moses, where you realize what Amram and Jochebed did, where when they had to put Moses in the bush, and then he was in the ark, or the bulrushes, and then he was in the ark, and then Pharaoh's daughter came down and took him into the household. Then the worst mistake that Pharaoh ever made in his life was he hired a babysitter. And that babysitter was Jochebed. And by the time that Pharaoh got Moses back to raise him like an Egyptian, it was too late, because Mama had worked on him. And he learned lessons that he never forgot, to the point as he got older, as he went back out to look upon his brethren and tried to defend him, his life was forever changed. But it didn't start when he went out to look. It started when Pharaoh hired a babysitter that was a Jewish mother, who was a godly woman. So you've got cases like there, where you've got Moses, you see what all happened there. You look at Timothy, you look at Samuel, where Hannah prayed for a child and then she gave him back and said she lent him to the Lord. But the other part of that is, not only did she take him and give him to Eli to be raised around the services of the Lord. But then it says that she went back every year with the coat. Now, a lot of times we might say, well, that was for the coat, and that's how we think about it in that sense. But in this case here, she was going back every year, and what he saw was the faith of his parents as they came back every year for the feasts that they had to do and for the offerings that they had to make to follow the Jewish law. And so that was his image there. So when you've got your little child in between your arms singing the B-I-B-L-E, think deeper and see how it's going on that. Now the fact is, though, as we look at these things, we've just got to start immediately wherever we are on this. You can't start now on something and make it retroactive to last year. You've got to start today on whatever it is you want to start. And it's never too early to start working with them. And the life of Jesus shows us that this was something in his life that was special because it was special to his parents. It was special to his relatives. It was special to his friends. And from that, he started working in the temple early because that was going to be his life later. And it was that exposure to that was just so critical. So if you haven't started in that service, if you haven't started in that life, you need to. You need to take it, to get serious about it, to work with it, to learn all you can. Because whatever you work on, whatever you study, whatever you learn, whatever you need to do on that, you need to be doing that because it's never, ever going to get earlier on that. And so, as we look at this and sing the invitation song, ask yourself, have you started on this yet? Have you worked with this part of your life yet? If not, make the decision to do that, because being around the assembly and the studying and the listening, the giving and the taking is so important. But then what Jesus did was took those things and grew and applied. And that's what we need to do. If we can help you become a child of God, we'd be glad to do that. We would take you and upon your confession that Jesus is the Son of God, upon your desire to live a new life and to repent of the sins that you've committed to make that change, we'll bury you in baptism for the remission of sins. If it's something you need to get square, that you need to get square with God, to work with God on, to get the forgiveness of God on, we'll be glad to help you on that in any way we can. Won't you come while we stand and while we sing?